We're talking about a group of Black physicians who are advocating for communities of color as clinical trials are underway for a COVID-19 vaccine. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The Physician Task Force, it wants to ensure that emerging vaccines and treatments will be trusted in communities that have been marginalized in our country's healthcare system, and that they're not left behind as vaccine development moves quickly. Have you had access to a COVID test? Can you get primary care? Will you trust a vaccine when it becomes available? And do you think you'll have access to it? We're at 800-642-1234. Dr. Dial Hewlett Jr. is an infectious disease specialist and a member of the National Medical Association COVID-19 Task Force on Vaccines and Therapeutics. He's medical director of the Disease Control Division and deputy commissioner at the Westchester County Department of Health in New York. Dr. Hewlett, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you very much for having me.
Well, tell us about this task force and how you got involved with it.
Yes, the task force that was put together was mainly organized by members of the National Medical Association, President Dr. Leon McDougall, and some of the past presidents. There was deep concern regarding the process by which a vaccine for COVID-19 was being developed. There was concern that the process might be rushed. There was concern that there might be shortcuts, which would in many ways or possibly have a negative impact on the safety of the product. And for that reason, we felt that it was very important for us to understand the process by which the data was being analyzed and to be able to look at it ourselves as a group of African-American physicians. And at the end of the day, we're all very optimistic that there's going to be a successful vaccine, and we want to be able to assure members of our communities around the country that the vaccine is in fact going to be effective and safe based upon our own review of the information.
Of the literature, yeah. How will the group operate? How will you handle the data?
Well, that is something that we are still trying to go through. One of the suggestions is that we actually approach the individual manufacturers as they are completing their applications and as the applications are being submitted. We are hoping that they will consent to having an advisory session with us to review some of the summaries of the case of the reports, to review some of the summaries of the safety and efficacy so that we can have an in-depth understanding of this. This is our hope, and we're hoping that this can occur as the FDA is reviewing the applications.
One of the goals is to bridge the trust gap between the federal government and the other, the CDC and the FDA and underserved communities like Black communities and Latinx communities. What does mistrust of the government and the medical establishment look like for these communities of color?
Well, communities of color, as you probably know, are very heterogeneous. There are certain segments of the population that are very distrustful, and some of this goes back historically to the Tuskegee experiments, where individuals were actually denied access to known treatments. There certainly are other reasons for distrust as well, as we look at some of the disparities which have surfaced during this pandemic. And so I think that that's one of the reasons why we as the National Medical Association and other individuals, other African-American physicians feel that we need to be able to look at this and to be able to serve as trusted messengers, if you will, for our communities.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Dr. Dial Hewlett, who is an infectious disease specialist and a member of the National Medical Association COVID-19 community. Are you concerned that the COVID-19 vaccine won't reach your community? When a vaccine becomes available, will you get it? Have you been able to get primary care amid the pandemic? Join in at 800-642-1234. Dr. Hewlett, let's look closer at clinical studies that are underway for a vaccine. There was a study out of UC San Francisco that found that trial participants, that they don't reflect the populations that COVID-19 has hit the hardest. Can you tell us more about why diversity is important in clinical trials and what you see going on in for COVID vaccine?
Yes, certainly. This has been a problem that has been going on for a very long time. And it is very important to have a cross-section, if you will, of the population involved in clinical trials. We know that in some situations, individuals from different ethnic groups, different races may respond differently. We know that it's important to try to include a good cross-section so that when the product is approved for use, we can be assured that it has been essentially evaluated in members of the community who are represented just universally. One of the problems with clinical trials is that we have a lack of representation of investigators who are investigators of color, members of the African-American and Latinx communities. Part of the reason is that in order to conduct some of these large trials, you have to have resources, and most of those resources are found in our large academic centers. And as a result of that, this really actually defines the population that you are going to be capturing at the very beginning. And so there's an effort on the part of our group, as well as others, to try to engage individuals of color to serve as investigators so that we'll be able to recruit individuals from the various communities that are underrepresented.
What is the role of these investigators? What do they do?
Well, investigators are the ones who actually coordinate and organize the enrollment of subjects into the clinical trials. And so they have to have a setup at their clinics or at their hospitals so that they can accommodate the individuals who come in. They have to have a way of recruiting. They actually have to have a staff. And so in order to be effective, you have to have a research coordinator. You have to have usually a dedicated pharmacist. You will have to have oftentimes nurses or nurse practitioners who will be able to obtain what we call informed consent from the individuals to explain to them the benefits, the potential benefits, and the risks. And so it is a rather complex process, and it does require a lot of time and dedication. The investigators are, for the most part, going to be physicians. Sometimes they may be infectious disease physicians, or they may be physicians with other specialties.
I'm wondering, you know, fast-tracking a COVID vaccine and the FDA's emergency use authorizations, that's been controversial. Do you have concerns over rapid rollout and transparency in the vaccine approval process as it relates to communities of color?
Yes, we do. And that's the main reason why the task force was formed. We had concerns about the rapid rollout. We actually believe at the end of the day, there is going to be an effective and safe vaccine, probably more than one that will be available in a short period of time. But we feel that in order for individuals in our communities to be willing to accept the vaccine, they will have to have assurance from a group like ours that it is effective and safe for them to use.
The National Medical Association has organized this committee that we're talking about with infectious disease specialist Dale Hewlett, who is on this task force on vaccines and therapeutics. You can join in. Do you think this oversight matters for patients of color? Do you think your community is reflected in the trials, in the data coming out on COVID? 800-642-1234. Back in a minute on the Ideas Network. We'll be right back. If you're just joining us, we're discussing a new task force led by physicians of color aimed at addressing concerns about emerging COVID-19 vaccines and treatments. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. So this committee is advocating, as we've been talking about, for more Black and brown people to be included in clinical trials. And the trial process, the group aims to develop trust for vaccines and treatments and make sure that Black and Latino and Native American communities have access to this care, given the fact that they have been hit much harder by this pandemic. Will you trust a vaccine when it becomes available? And do you think you'll have access to it? We're at 800-642-1234. Dr. Dial Hewlett is an infectious disease specialist and a member of the National Medical Association COVID-19 Committee. And Dr. Hewlett stays with us. Let's take a call now. Rosa is joining us from Waterford this morning. Hi, Rosa.
Hello, good morning. I work at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. I'm very fortunate to meet some amazing minds. And in the past week, I've met two microbiologists just in passing and asked both of them, would you take the COVID vaccine? And both said no. They told me it's because the COVID virus is changing, just like a flu virus. It changes. Therefore, the vaccine won't. It's just going to be hit or miss, just like a flu vaccine. And they also added that in the future, the COVID virus will just be like a flu virus. We'll have to deal with it every year.
Dr. Hewlett, how would you respond to Rosa there and, you know, the trust in a vaccine?
Yes. Well, thank you very much for that question. And I totally understand the sentiments that are being expressed. This is a new virus. And so we really don't know exactly how it's going to behave in years to come. One of the things that we do know is that it would be important for us to have a vaccine, even if it is something that might have to be repeated every year or every 2 years, just as we do with influenza. We are hoping that that won't be the case, but we really have no way to know for sure. One of the things that you have brought out is very important, that we are trying to gain trust. We're trying to obtain information that is going to educate us in terms of this vaccine and the protection that it is going to give, and what is the duration of the protection. So I think in many cases, certainly an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure, if you will.
African Americans have died from COVID at over twice the rate of white people. What particular challenges do you see that Black communities face when it comes to COVID exposure, obtaining treatment, and what is happening in the community?
Well, this is something that, again, these disparities have existed for a very, very long time. And just to highlight this, I think for some of your listeners, I think it's important for people to know that if you look at the early experience in a place like in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, one of the things that was noted back in April was that Blacks in Milwaukee comprised about 26% of the population, yet they represented nearly half of the cases that were reported, and they represented 80% of the deaths. One of the problems I think that we face, in addition to limited access to healthcare, is that there are crowded living conditions. And we know that if people are living in multi-generational facilities, that they are more likely to contract this, and that it is more difficult for them to be on quarantine or isolation if we have an infection within a household. Likewise, one of the things that we found from some of the research that we've done is that a disproportionate percentage of African Americans and Latinx communities work in occupations where they are considered first line workers.
So essential workers
who cannot, yes, essential workers, that's correct. So they cannot work from home as some of the other communities can. And so this also has been a contributing factor. And then finally, the other contributing factor is the existence of comorbidities. So uncontrolled hypertension, obesity, chronic respiratory disease, these are all things which predispose individuals to morbidity and to possibly death from this. And part of the reason why these things are so prevalent, or at least part of the reason, is that there may be a lack of access to healthcare in our communities.
We're talking with Dr. Dial Hewlett, who is an infectious disease specialist and a member of the National Medical Association COVID-19 Committee. It's aimed at safeguarding and vetting vaccines and treatments for communities of color, with marginalized people at the forefront of concern as we look at these new treatments for COVID. You can join in with your questions at 800-642-1234. Dr. Hewlett, as you lay this out, you know, these inequities and the systemic racism and the structures of our healthcare system can't be fixed immediately, but communities can take steps in the right direction. What would you tell public health departments that are trying to get their arms around COVID and governments as they look at how to be more inclusive?
Well, one of the things that we are doing at our health department, that is, since I work for a health department, is we are trying to place an emphasis on education. One of our main jobs, in addition to the prevention of the spread of illness, is also to educate people on how they can prevent illness and limit illness from occurring. And so educating the public is one of the major things that we want to do. We want to make sure that we are putting out factual, objective information for people. We want to make sure that we are combating what we call misinformation or disinformation. We know that we already have problems with skepticism in regard to vaccines. We've had recent outbreaks of the measles, which is something that is totally preventable and probably can be eradicated. However, we have a lot of members and segments of our community that are skeptical about giving their children the various vaccines. And so it's an uphill battle, but it is something that I think that we and the health departments can do. And again, circling back to our own task force, the NMA task force, we feel that this is something that we have to do for our community to make sure that we are trying to make sure that they have accurate, objective information and making sure that we're combating the disinformation and propaganda that might be circulating about various things having to do with this pandemic.
How do you approach the concern around people being afraid to get a test because they fear they may lose their job if they find that they have COVID?
This is a big concern. And all that we can really do, and in our health department, of course, there are regulations and laws, and we can actually work with employers to make sure that they are treating individuals fairly. So when a person is ordered to be on quarantine, by law, by healthcare law, they really should not be fired from their job because they have to be on quarantine. So in health departments, at least in our own, we issue statements so that individuals can provide that to the employers so that they know that they are ordered to be on either isolation or quarantine. But this is certainly a very legitimate concern that people have. And unfortunately, a lot of the members of our community work for employers who are not as subject to following the guidelines and rules.
Are you seeing at all where you are that the capacity for testing is there, but there aren't nearly the number of tests being done that they're, but the testing capacity far exceeds demand?
Well, it's really a twofold kind of a situation. In our underserved communities, we continue to have a lack of access to testing.
Okay.
There's a problem in terms of the timing of the testing. And so with our gold standard test that we've been doing, oftentimes it may take 3 or 4 days before the person gets the result. In many of our communities, people have to rely on public transportation because they cannot get to the actual sites. That's not necessarily the same in some of our more affluent communities. So I think we certainly need more testing. That is clear. We have to make sure that people understand that it's a good thing to have the test done if you have been exposed or if you actually are ill with symptoms that are suggestive of COVID-19.
Very quickly, let's bring in Matt in Nisida. Hi, Matt. Are you there? And Matt is not there. Matt wants to know, have hospitals outside of New York been overwhelmed anywhere? What have you seen?
Well, our community in Westchester, we were actually at the epicenter of the outbreak. Yeah. We're about 30 miles north of New York City. And during the peak of the outbreak, our hospitals were being essentially overwhelmed, if you will, with the number of cases. And so it wasn't just in New York City. We had similar problems in our county. There were similar problems in neighboring Nassau County. There were also similar problems in some of the communities that were close to New York and New Jersey. And you're seeing the same things now all over the country. So hopefully, if we are able to get a better handle on things, we can prevent that from occurring moving forward. That is one of the other reasons why we are desperately trying to encourage everyone to accept the influenza vaccine, because as you know, influenza is one of the important things that causes people to enter the emergency rooms and to be admitted into the hospitals. And so if we can limit that, it will be very helpful in keeping the beds freed.
Dr. Hewlett, thank you for joining us.
Oh, thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Dr. Dial Hewlett Jr. is part of the National Medical Association COVID-19 Task Force on Vaccines and Therapeutics, and he is an alumnus, by the way, of the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. Coming up, we talk with a UW-Madison researcher involved in the effort to get a saliva test. It's after this news update on the Ideas Network.